Good evening, America. Good afternoon, Australia. And welcome to everyone listening around the world. You're listening to Everyday Business with Mel B and our Unwavered Success Show. Before I introduce you to Mel again, this is the second in our show series. And for those of you that are listening live on LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, and Twitter, Payo is ready and waiting to answer your questions, take your comments, and provide you with links to anything that we talk about in the show today. Now, I need to also remind you, if you've missed the first show, just jump on to our YouTube channel or onto Binge Networks TV USA, Hero Go TV USA, or the Tony TV channel app, available on all Roku, Samsung, and LG smart TVs across the planet. Now, just a quick reminder about my gorgeous co-host, Mel Belmont. And Mel is a mindset mentor, an intuitive healer, a speaker on perspective shifts, and an empathic elevation. From a very young age, Mel never thought she fitted in. She was severely bullied and wanted to escape. And at 15 years of age, that's precisely what she did. In her 20s, she started to be inspired to understand the universe and spirituality. She started her learning and development journey at that time. In her 30s, she had a deep dissatisfaction that drove her to seek more before finally leaving her soul-dulling, high-achieving corporate role in 2014. By 2017, Mel was reprogramming her perspectives to align with her ultimate life path. She is widely considered a change maker for the superconscious transformation. She partners with empathpreneurs to untangle their mind web so they feel unwavered confidence to accomplish the impact they're currently only dreaming about. She is recognized as one of the top 10 healers in the world in 2019 and in the 1% of leadership coaches this year here in Australia. I am absolutely delighted to welcome back to the show Mel B. Hello, Mel.
Hi.
We were chatting just before the show and I mentioned to Mel that in the background we can hear thunder. So, lovely audience, if you happen to hear thunder during the show, it's just a storm in Talabudra Valley. Mel's quite safe in Brisbane and we are going to continue our series in talking about the super consciousness and in particular mind web analysis. And before we do that, I'm going to get Mel to very quickly recap in some of the components we talked about last week, and that is, what is super consciousness and what is the mind web? Over to you, Mel.
Oh, thank you for the introduction. Okay, so last week we talked about super conscious versus subconscious. And the super conscious is the alignment of body, mind, spirit, higher self, and ego. And when they are like your spirit team or your council of advisors, like this is all aspects of self. That's the difference between super conscious and just the subconscious part of your mind. So I love bringing the guidance from all parts of self for soul purpose and alignment. So mind web analysis. Well, let's backtrack a little bit. 4 years ago, approximately, I lose track of the month so quickly. I was doing a meditation, seeking some guidance on how I could create my own process based on the previous about 13, 14 years I've been working in the mindset and subconscious space. And I was kind of like, I want to make my own. Can you like give me some guidance? And it came through. Yeah. I combined at least four different methods that I'd used personally and created my own beautifully succinct, fast method that I actually call cognitive reframe process. So that is the first part of my processes, all of my sessions start with CRP, and that's taking you into theta state, which is that kind of dream state. It's that really weird stage where you know you're dreaming, but you're still dreaming.
But you're not quite. Like,
you don't always get it. So it's kind of like it's deeper in and more conscious than dreaming, but different from being awake and fully conscious. And so this area back here, theta, that's how you can get in touch with what's causing the distractions and the sabotage and the doubts and those things that my clients come for support with. Now, I'm going to go quite deep. So let me kind of go through it. And then if something's not clear, maybe ask a question at the end, because it's kind of like I'm trying to break it down. It's very complex. So we kind of live in our imagination, and that imagination remembers bad, negative, heavy feelings from our past. And quite often we're daydreaming when we're goal setting or when we're thinking about our lives. We're kind of dreaming about a different future that's different from our present. And what that means is we're not often grateful for where we're at now, what we've come through. And we kind of like, we live for the either regrets or the times that have gone by, or we're trying to live into a future we don't have. So what most of that means is we're never present, or rarely present and happy with our current, which is why gratitude is a really important and commonly, I guess, utilized tool. And what that means is we're so busy.
Why it's so important.
Yeah.
Gratitude is incredibly important.
It is. It is. And the easiest way to remember or find gratitude is to live in the moment, because we are human beings. We're not human doings or human dones from the past. And we're not human futurists. We're human beings. We've got to live in the moment. When we do that, it's a lot easier to be grateful for where we're at now. So we know that we've got some beliefs, and we know our imagination is attaching emotions and feelings and things around the experiences we've had. And so what we want to do is often we skip ahead the emotion we're feeling right now if it's not a pleasant, positive one. And so what we're doing is we're kind of trying to bypass our state. Whatever we're feeling in the moment, we're like, we're told it's negative, it's bad, and you shouldn't be feeling that. And so we're either trying to get back to where we were, or we're trying to jump ahead to be something else. Now, scientists and studies tell us that 95% of our behaviors and the decisions we make from our emotions that come up stem from our subconscious mind, not the consciousness. And the conscious mind only really accounts for our cognitive activities, which is our decision-making and our responses. And so what happens is we use a lot of logic inadvertently. We default to logic when we're not getting the results we want. And we don't really know what's going on in the background, not just in subconscious, but our entire being, our superconscious. And that's what we need to kind of address to lay the foundations for what we want going forward. Then, and then coming to the mind web, what we don't realize is what we've inherited as a human being, spiritually, genetically, historically, ancestrally. What have we inherited into our DNA, into our cells, into our energetic being? Now, a mind web. If you'd like to bring up the slide of the mind web,
bring up the slide.
This is my metaphor for the neural pathways that we create in our belief, from our belief systems in our mind. And so I've got my picture, so I'm going to look aside here. So it's not in a clockwork. It's just a kind of web. If you imagine or visualize a web, it's got all these threads that kind of anchor and hold the web structure in place. And it's kind of like a sieve for what it wants to filter through of our thoughts, our thinkings, our feelings. Now, the problem is we can have generational imprints, and that is lessons that our past generations have not yet resolved, or a belief that's carried through. Now, an example of that is money. A lot of hardships in our grandparents and great-great and so on back in that lineage, a lot of financial hardships from wars and famines and all sorts going on. We've got a lot of genetic imprints that are being cleared out in our lifetime in this abundant century that we're in. Some other things is karmic ties to energy. So that's a tie that's kind of tethered to our energy being, to an energy. So we're an energetic being. We've kind of got like these invisible threads, or I kind of visualize it like electricity wires. And there's just this kind of sending and receiving currents and messages. And that's what I imagine a karmic tie to be. And it's kind of anchored into our system. Then we can have things like DNA damage, which is inherited sometimes, or it can be for ourselves. So I went through chemo. I had a lot of DNA damage. I had a lot of cellular damage that I had to repair. And so I was doing that weekly after every session. And that enabled me, not 100%, I didn't breeze through chemo, but I went through it a lot better than the nurses expected me to. And I believe that's because I was doing a lot of body work with the body consciousness. The other thing we can have is elements of forgiveness. And forgiveness isn't necessarily letting what has been done wrong to us. So I was sexually abused. So it's not forgiving my abuser for the actions. It's forgiven that soul that gave me that experience for the negative human experience that I went through. Soul connection, I believe I needed to learn from that experience in order to show up today with all of the wisdom I have.
You are.
Yeah, from that abuse, I now can relate to other victims in the way no one else really can unless they've gone through something. Of course, everybody's different.
Absolutely.
And often forgiveness is for self, for allowing something to happen to us, for not knowing, or forgiving the child for not knowing any better, for trusting the evil words that were being shared and kind of, what's the word?
Evil deeds. And,
yeah. The other thing is axioms, which are similar to limiting beliefs. So a limiting belief is something that we have experienced in this lifetime, and we've associated an unhelpful belief around it. So a limiting belief I used to have, really innocent one, was growing up, mom told me that kissing boys would make me pregnant. It's just a harmless thing that I believed. So the limiting belief is I believed it to be true and it's limited. And then when I realized it wasn't true, it was fine. An axiom is, something that happened. Yes. Well, an axiom is actually more around I've witnessed or heard something about somebody else. So I haven't experienced it myself, but I've taken it on to be true. I haven't got an example. What's an axiom? I can't think of one.
That could be around, for example, your mother's fear or your mother's lack of money meant that you grew up thinking that there was never enough money, when in fact there was. Yes. That was more related to the way that your mother interacted with the world. Therefore, you as a child thought that there was no access to money, and that's what you're trying. That's sort of what you mean, isn't it? It's not you. So, as a child, for example, I didn't experience that scarcity. However, I saw my mom think that there was never enough money, when in fact there was, and we never went hungry, et cetera, et cetera. So that axiom is my ongoing belief that there's never enough money.
That's it. Thank you for bailing me out there. My mind was already moving on to other things. But yes, and so sometimes there's this meshment between what is our energy and what is our parents' stuff that we're mixing up. But limiting belief is the most common kind of, I've got a limited belief or a block. Then we've got womb and birth stuff. This is really cool. When we're in the womb, what did we experience? So there's a lot of mums experiencing maybe apprehension about being good enough as a new mum, first time baby.
Yeah.
The mum is feeling anxiety or nervousness or some energy, and baby is taking that energy and absorbing, oh my God, I need to be nervous or anxious about life too. So we clear those and some birthing experiences. Some babies don't have pleasant birthings, and they are terrorized and terrified of this world because they come from this beautiful, safe, dark cocoon into the hospital environment, into bright and loud and cold and all those things. So woman birthing. Conception is a really cool one. It is when the soul is coming down into the embryo.
Into the
and
cell.
It's kind of this transition between the dimensions. So soul is coming into third dimension. It can sometimes get a little bit confused, even though it made a contract up there. This is what I'm going to experience. These are the angels or the other souls I'm going to interact with. And in that transition down, something happens and the soul can freak out and go, ah, I'm terrified about having this human experience. So quite often, really weird, I don't know why I'm afraid of something, is that little soul.
Related to that.
Yeah, so cool. And then past life can be anything in past life. I've had clients go up to other realms. So I've got one client, it's amazing. She was like a kind of conductor of the souls and allocating. And so she was dealing with a lot of overwhelm. And so the past life she went to was actually another dimension, an entirely different time zone. It was amazing. And she's, I just got all these souls and I've got the responsibility of giving them the right tasks and right contracts. It's like, wow, that's cool. But sometimes it's often just normal past life of our past life in a different body, different time frame. I think I'm getting that storm. I'm just going to put the light on.
Now, when we talk about past life, is that in any way related to those feelings of deja vu? For example, I remember landing the plane coming into Edinburgh, and I knew vaguely that there was some Scottish heritage there, but I had an overwhelming feeling of coming home. I can remember it absolutely clearly. It's a visceral and body feeling of coming home, just landing in Edinburgh Airport. I've never been in this lifetime and in this conscious, I had never been to Edinburgh, but landing on that tarmac, I felt completely enmeshed in oh my God, I'm home.
Yeah, so it could be a couple of different things. Well, deja vu, I think, are messages from our subconscious, superconscious, higher self. It can be different ways. That's my belief. I haven't actually found a definitive answer for deja vu. I definitely get the sense, for me, it's an acknowledgement I'm doing something on my right path. For me, it's kind of like a little, ooh, I've experienced this before. This must be right. But
yes,
I think people, we have different, and we're going to talk about clair senses shortly. And so we all have different gifts in tuning into our talents of our clair senses. So maybe different people are more psychic and they get these different messages. So I reckon for you, it could be very much ancestral or past life. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So the mind web, to conclude that part of the education, was to help identify.
Just share that again.
Yep. Is to pull and identify these different anchors of that web and basically to deconstruct it, identify all of the things. Sometimes there's eight of them, sometimes just two. Sometimes there's a couple of people to forgive or a couple of situations to resolve. So it's basically the analysis is what needs to be done to resolve this challenge client is experiencing today. So that's the analysis.
Now, you go into that with your clients, don't you? Step by step, go into all of those elements and figure out what it is that's holding that person back or blocking them from living their best life, essentially, isn't it?
Totally. It's about unpicking that mind web.
Mm-hmm. I love that word, unpicking a mind web. And I've got it in my brain only. When you talk about mind web, I now immediately see the spider web inside a brain, which is a wonderful way to think of it, isn't it? Like a spider web enmeshed in your brain. And Mel's job is to unpick it and unstick it and make sure you move on and get past those things that are stopping you.
And there's more than one mind web. We've probably got hundreds of mind webs.
Yeah.
That some need to be resolved. I wouldn't say hundreds need to be done. But addressing them and understanding them is absolutely, if you're stuck, for sure, what needs to be done. So that's where the quantum healing comes in, is the next step from the mind web analysis.
Yes. Tell us about quantum healing and what it is and why it's important.
Okay, so quantum healing has got a bit of a buzzword, but it's not new science. In fact, it's more than at least 30 years old. And Deepak Chopra was the one who kind of mainstreamed it, I think about 20, 30 years ago now. Now, so
it's
quantum
new, isn't it, really?
Pardon?
In the scheme of life and millennia, it's relatively new.
I think I'm gonna disagree with that statement and agree with it. So ancient wisdom has been around for eons, and I don't know what's more than a century. Is it eon or decades? Long time.
Millennia.
Thank you. That's the right word. But in our kind of Western world, quantum, because we're all about the logic and the science, and I need evidence. So we're starting to find, and we have the technology now, that's, and studies are being done that's proving this stuff to be true. And I'll get to a little bit more about that in a second. But a quantum is the smallest unit of energy. So it's kind of referred to usually, I think it's an electron. And so a quantum of consciousness is a thought or an intention. So quantum healing is the process of altering those non-serving subconscious thoughts and intentions so they're kind of more aligned with our superconscious and the desires and the results that we are aspiring for. So the healing part comes from identifying the mind web and doing those processes for the generational imprint and the conception and all those things that need to be done so that our reticulator activating system isn't being triggered and we're kind of bypassing its filtration. Because they're the ones that kind of set it up, and often either unknown from our birth or from childhood when we don't have context. So the problem is children are hearing things and seeing things, like we talked last time about Santa. Child doesn't know.
Yeah.
It's not real. And it's innocent, just the sponges absorbing it all. So if we think of those innocent things, everything has been absorbed. And so it's kind of working out what those beliefs are that need to be resolved. So that's kind of quantum.
That's actually a lovely way of thinking it. So it's actually about healing single thoughts at a time. And once you start healing those single thoughts that are not serving us, not moving us forward, impeding on us living our best life, that's essentially what quantum is. It's about healing. Our next diagram is the deep belief diagram. Do you want us to explain that to us, please, Mel?
Yeah, so from the mind web analysis, which is the processes, then it's kind of like, okay, processes are all very well. What am I going to use them in? Like, how am I going to like create a system around that? So that's the deep belief hacking, which incorporates the quantum transformations for each one. So let me pull up my diagram. So it's the mindset. So that's the consciousness thinking. So like we were talking about earlier, the gratitude. So it's catching ourselves logically. Oh, I'm having a reaction. I have energy in motion. Is that normal? Is that a reasonable response in this situation? Or am I flaring up and reacting to something? So that's the conscious part. It's the hardest part to work with. Then we've got the quantum healing, which is resolving the issues in the first place. So the triggers are coming up. I wonder why that's making me react. Let's resolve that. And the intuitive self-mastery is I teach my clients how to do their own mind web analysis and use my recordings that all clients get access to, with me guiding them through the process. It's all systemized. So everything is repetitive, so you can learn. Yes. And so you can combine catching yourself. Oh, I need to redress that. I don't know what's going on there. Let's find it. So you have the self-mastery combined with your intuition. So I'm guiding and teaching my clients how to do this stuff on their own, all so that they can make a better impact in their family, their communities, their schools, and of course, in business and life. That's deeply packing and integrating it all together.
That must be very fulfilling, Mel, for you as a mentor and coach to get to the point that they're at the end of a whole series of coaching with you and they're starting to see a better life and they're starting to feel and experience a better life. That must be very fulfilling for you.
Incredibly. It's what I'm here on earth to do. So I can't ignore it, really. And this is why I know I'm on my path, because I'm getting these downloads for processes and I'm getting this guidance of how do I put all this together. So yeah, I'm definitely on my path. I'm so fulfilled.
Fantastic. Now, the next part that we wanted to talk about today is do we really have to delve into something that was traumatic, a bad memory, a bad experience, a bad event? Do we really have to?
Yeah, and look, that's a common thing. And I remember when I started my healing process 18 years ago, I'm losing track of the years. I thought it would be traumatic and it would open it like, we talk about the skeleton of closets. Closet of skeletons in my past. And I was terrified about having to relive my sexual abuse, obviously. I thought I would fall apart and my brand new marriage would fall apart with Regan the First. And I actually thought if I started to address this and bring it out into the open, I honestly had the belief that he wouldn't love me anymore. Now, obviously, I know that's completely false, but I was so afraid of doing the work that I would change so much that he wouldn't like me, even though I became a much better, softer, more feminine, more rounded human. I was just terrified at the start. So I get this. Now, because I've adapted at least four modalities and they're kind of, I'm always bringing new concepts as I go, and we're accessing theta state to identify the mind web. And then because we are only locating the memory. So what we're doing is we're asking for the memory of this trigger. So I'm feeling the emotion of fear. Show me what first made me fear. Show me the thing that's first causing this, whether it's past life, whether it's a karmic tie, whatever's causing that. Just show me the scenario and we don't go any further. Just show me what the context of the situation is. And then we actually retreat. We shut down that memory and we process it in a completely different, safe environment. So reliving, it makes me nervous when I hear people who have to go through therapy.
Say that they have to read through.
Yeah. You're causing more stress that's not necessary for our superconscious. So, yeah.
Your cells, your DNA, your mind, and your body will all have varying levels of memory around a traumatic event or incident. And you don't want to trigger that, do you?
No, we identify it.
That's not good for anyone.
Nope. So I had a car accident. I think that's three years ago now. And I'm still triggered a little bit when we brake suddenly on the highway. I'm still a nervous passenger. So I should be going in and addressing that, but it's not like a massive impact on my life. But I was involved in that accident. I walked away unscathed, which was a miracle. But if you have trauma within your body, you need to bring body consciousness in on it.
Do that.
You can heal
it.
Yeah, we can do body work around, I won't go into it. Body work is absolutely possible.
Yeah.
So what all of this, all of that system does is the next diagram, if you like, is the transformations. So the first element is a perspective shift. So often we need to help past self or child self understand a new context, a new perspective, which allows us to have a new attitude or belief around whatever we previously believed. Then we can have a paradigm shift, which is a changed behavioral response. And it's a paradigm shift when it's a permanent adjustment. And a quantum shift.
So for you, I'm sorry, Mel. So for you, the perspective would be being aware that you have a negative response to hard braking in a car. The yep. paradigm shift would be having no response or not being aware that the car is braking, have a braking hard. And okay. the new identity would be living life without sensing something sensing impending doom when you hit the brakes hard in the yep. car. So yep. that quantum shift is a transformation.
Yeah, it's an overhaul of the entire situation. So quantum is mm-hmm. completely almost seeing not just the paradigm of, oh, it's exciting when I brake and, you know, like changing it that way, but it's just like, wow, like this is all just normal. That's the next level, mm-hmm. reconstructed perspective of that issue entirely.
So for the audience that's listening, if yeah. you have one of those reactions to anything, and it could be anything, couldn't it? Anything from fear of heights, fear of flying, hard braking in the car, could be anything, couldn't it, Mel?
Oh, absolutely. The way somebody speaks to you, or somebody sending you a message and you feeling like you're being taken advantage of, anything. We're triggered probably 20 times a day. It's how we respond to yes. the triggers, or removing the triggers entirely, which is the final objective. Sorry, I've got a massive storm brewing out here and the lightning's going off and it keeps catching my eye. Sorry.
I know. It's okay. I was listening to it must be a big storm because it's crashing and banging outside of my studio. And I'm thinking, please just wait till we finish the show with Mel. This is important stuff, universe. So the importance of doing this work is the difference between just doing life and doing life in you as your best self, following a life path with purpose and creating impact. Those are the two sides, isn't it? It's very simple.
Yeah, and I believe we're here on earth to learn. I think human beings is to experience a range of emotions that I believe we agree before we come down or come into this life, and to resolve stuff in order for enlightenment. Yeah. That's my view of spirituality. It's not dissimilar to some religions, so it's just my view of the world.
Now, one of the other things that I find important to think about too is that any of the work that you do on yourself in terms of healing at a DNA and cellular level, you heal for the next generation. So it's mm-hmm. not just your own life. You get to impact the life of your kids, your grandkids, your great grandkids. And that is just mind blowing, isn't it?
Well, I'm just going to blow your mind even further, because that's absolutely true. And you're also healing your past ancestral wounds as well.
Wow. That's amazing. That's brilliant.
Or your parents. So a lot of stuff done in womb and early childhood, we can do a lot of healing for mom.
That sounds good, actually. That sounds really good.
It is good. And they
they don't even need to know. So I want to know just quickly what the difference between quantum healing and NLP is. Now, NLP is neuro-linguistic programming. I have done NLP and I've found it to be incredibly good at changing and healing and moving me forward. But what's the difference between NLP and quantum healing?
Well, truth is, I've not studied NLP, so I don't know exactly. And I know there's quite a few different modalities or processes within NLP. So I can only really talk from my own experiences and from my clients. But I want to talk about Dr. David Hamilton's book, Why Woo-Woo Works. He shares a whole heap of studies and science behind meditation and other clinical practices. Now, he states, and I'm going to kind of try and get it from memory, there's no question that our beliefs cause chemical changes in the brain, and that these changes depend on what a person believes. So I'm pretty sure it's something mm-hmm. like that. So it's about reframing what often is our childhood version interpreted, because they don't have the context or the experience or the wisdom.
That's right.
And so they don't apply the correct filters that we do as adults. And so mm-hmm. if we can change the beliefs, then we're absolutely changing literally the shape and the context and the programming of the brain. So innocent Maybe. Example, I guess, again, is that Santa, but children don't have the context of how big a world is, how many homes Santa would have to visit, and that sleighs can't fly being pulled by magical reindeer. So there comes that sweet spot when they start switching from believing to applying logic and context. Now, I just want to add another thought that's come into mind. They explain some of this of how powerful our mind is. There was a study done, I think it was someone like 40, like asthma, lung disease kind of patients who had big issues with breathing. Yes. Now, they were given a placebo puffer thing, inhaler, but told it contained allergens. Now, 19 of them, this is completely placebo, they had a reaction. Their body responded, believing they had taken in the things they were allergic to. Allergy. To the point where 12 of those had full-blown attacks. And then they were given a placebo going, okay, here you go, here's another puffer, another placebo, and their symptoms stopped. So the power of our mind is super, it's mind-blowing.
Phenomenal.
But the science around how our mind works is showing that this is just the programming, and it's the way the mind interacts with one another and how it responds to our hippocampus and our amygdala and all the different, how it functions. So I don't know how NLP works, but I know that the quantum is around tracking back the thoughts that are telling our mind what to believe, and our body responds from our thoughts. So if you like, I'm sure I've got in the next diagram, let me get the brain controls. The reason some of this happens is we need to talk about the reticulator activating system. It is
the RAS.
The RAS. It's a filter. So think of it again, a little bit like the mind web. If we received all of the information, I don't know how they know this, but apparently it's 20 million bits of it. And sometimes I read 13 million bits per second.
That's
whatever
a lot.
Whatever the number is, it's a lot of information coming through all our senses. And we'll get to that in a second. And so our nervous system and our RAS first has that conscious response, and then it goes through the subconscious mind, the nervous system, comes out, superconscious emotions and behaviors. So if you can imagine, it's kind of all being processed microseconds, but we can't process it all. And so a lot of the information is being filtered out because we don't know what to focus on, especially as children. So what we do in the quantum and in the healing is we give extra information to provide more perspective and more context around, well, what don't you know? What didn't that kid realize in that situation? What was a brain filtering out that actually was serving? That's kind of the nervous system, Raz. Yes. I've run out of puff now.
No. But that's okay. That's okay. I've got a question.
Yeah.
Does our mind filter out that excess information to protect us? And if it does, doesn't that mean that it's going to filter out some of the stuff that's helpful for us?
Yeah, absolutely. So it is, sometimes it is to help us because our brain would just with all the information.
I heard that one.
It would explode. So our brain couldn't cope with all of the information. And additionally, what we focus on, we've probably heard this a lot, what we focus on
is what we get.
Other things are being filtered out. So sometimes it's helpful, sometimes it's not. It's just a limitation of being human. Like, let's just cut ourselves some slack.
Yes.
We are not robots. We cannot process all that information at once. But some of the amazing things I want to talk about clairsenses is a cool study. I've written this one down. Professor, who's also a Sir Rudolf Peters, he did a study between a mum and a severely disabled boy. And what they wanted to do was see and check, and this will all make sense in a second, was how connected two people can be and whether emotions and feelings could be seen or heard or felt. And the quote is, and I had to write this down because I don't want to quote a professor wrong. He said the boy's ability to sense what his mother could see was within odds against chance of 1 billion to 1. So that tells me, so that tells me without a doubt, they're believing with me. How powerfully connected humans are, how much access we have to our mind. This boy was seeing images that his mum, in his mind, that his mum was being shown. Our brains are phenomenal.
That's seriously cool.
Idea. Then on top of that is the empathetic connection, so the emotional connection. So the author of the book, Why We Were Works, he has been able to demonstrate that empathy reduces emotional distance. Meaning the higher person's empathetic connection to the person, or in my case, a client, the better they are at receiving telepathic sensations from that person. So we have access to our brain. We don't really fully understand. The science is catching up. And to the point where psychologist, I'm full of quotes now, Dick Bierman quotes, "We're satisfied that people can sense the future before it happens. We'd like to move on from studying that into studying what kinds of people are good at it." Wow. We're satisfied that people can sense the future before it happens. Science has proven it. The studies are there. So you combining empathy, compassion, access in different parts of our brain, and then your clairsenses. That kind of explains the quantum healing and how it works and how it's a bit different, et cetera, and why I love working with empaths. Empaths feel people.
I was just going to say, now I understand. Now I understand. And I just for the audience, every time I talk to Mel when we're having these shows, I have electric feeling and goosebumps on my forearms. Now, that I think is largely due to the fact that I am an empath talking to another passionate empath about the amazing capacity of our mind and our brain and our ability to change our life and our life circumstances just by doing some healing. And the weather would actually agree with us today because there's thunder and lightning, and I reckon that means we're on the right track. Now, Mel, the next part of the show...
Sorry, it's very cleansing and healing for me. People don't like storms, but I find that
I love them. I love them. Now, since we're talking about healing, part of the healing process is actually processing memories. And so the next thing I wanted to talk about with you, Mel, is what it's like processing memories and what that process is like, and if there's issues with processing memories that might be difficult.
The challenge of being human is being human, being human, human beings. Like that's the hardest journey there is. Some souls go, nope, I'm bailing. I don't want to do that human experience. They change their mind. That's what I believe lost pregnancies are, is soul going, no, I'm out of here. So first I kind of want to talk about the way we manage.
What a beautiful way of thinking about it.
Yeah. Well, it's what I've found more than once. I think I've had 3 souls who changed their mind, and I've had experiences with those souls going,
I don't want to do it.
So they bail out. Okay, so how a human manages energy is probably the easy way of explaining some of this. So these, again, are my concepts of how I believe we process. The first is we often get a body response, a gut response. And if we don't, if we have a scary situation or a negative situation, negative in quote marks, often we get shut down. We don't fully fight or flight to conclusion. We shut down. And the emotion gets held onto and stuffed down. So that's the first kind of thing. So we're kind of managing this one set of energy from the first experience. So for me, as an abused child, there was lots of silence and lots of fear being just stuffed down and kept quiet, right? So that's the first one. Then kind of moving up in our body, which is where a lot of us feel it in our tummies, we manage it. So we're holding energy. So we're using energy to keep the emotions stuffed down, as it's a common phrase. And we're keeping it safely locked away. So we're using two lots of energy now. The first, unexpressed energy. The second one, like keeping the lid on top of the boiling pot.
Yes.
And then the third lot of energy is our brain or our consciousness trying to act like everything's okay. So wearing a mask and putting the brave front on, that's another set of energy. So you've got three lots of energy expression going on. And it's no much wonder we are emotionally burned out and struggling. So to access the memories allows us to kind of just let all of that go and heal with love, always with love, bring in universal, unconditional, never-ending love, and bring back calmness to the body. So the memory, it's not really the memory we're releasing, it's the emotion that's trapped from that associated memory.
With the memory.
Kind of makes sense?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So that memories and feelings are actually based on past experiences.
Yes.
And we have a current interpretation of that past experience, which may or may not be right, correct? And so we need to learn how to respond in a different way and create a different feeling around those memories when they come up. Yeah?
Sort of. I don't want to nitpick. Okay. Sort of. That's close.
This is really good, deep stuff, Mel.
It's very deep. I really had to think today, like, how am I going to explain all of this in an hour?
And the diagrams are very helping a lot. Mm. So the next thing we wanted to talk about is brain frequency and development and how that impacts on our lives. Can you tell us about that, Mel?
Yeah, so... do you want to pull up the diagram, actually? It might actually help.
Yes.
Brain frequency diagrams. So we receive, think of us, and it's often used, like a brain, a radio tuner, right? We have different frequencies. Yes. And we kind of vibrate at different hertz. So when we're asleep, it's much different frequency from when we're awake. So the kind of the infant state, right down the bottom, 0.5 to 3 hertz is basically that baby up to about 2 years old is observing and downloading and receiving. It's very passive. It's not interactive. It's kind of a lot of receiving in the delta state. Theta, which is where I do our
work
from.
That's where you do your work.
Yep, it's 4 to 8 hertz. So it's very open to programming and it's very suggestionable, which is where the kids are up to about the age of 6 to 8-ish. Lots of observation still, but it's highly, what's the word? Malleable. That's the word. We can completely kind of, very manipulative in that stage. We can usually tell kids that Santa can fit down a chimney. So then we've got the 8 to 12 hertz, which is around about the ages of 6 to 12 of alpha. This is usually quite a calm. This is quite often the meditation state, quite a high awareness of self, It's less about external, more about the internal, lots of reflection. So meditation is usually done in alpha state. Beta, probably from the around about the age of 12, this is where a lot of the consciousness kicks in, a lot of filters, logic. Okay. A lot of conscious awareness and kind of making context. So from around that age of 12, it's a very different way of seeing the world. And so that's why teenagers can be so hard, because a lot of the realities are kind of like they're having paradigm shifts constantly. So it's going to go easy on a young teenagers. And then gamma, peak performance, 35 and above. The higher up you go, the more focused you are. So,
okay.
That's the stages that we learn. And so those early stages, absolutely. More's coming in than we think. And we know this. We've all heard. I love sharing the story of when any child, whether it's your own or someone else, but uses sass or swears for the first time. And the context is so bang on. And you're like, oh, my Lord, they're swearing in completely the right way. And it's like, that's the stage when consciousness is really coming in and kind of shutting down that openness that they had before. So, yeah.
Fantastic. Now, they are wonderful concepts for us to discuss today. And seeing as we're just about out of time, I wanted you to quickly tell us that you have all sorts of amazing programs that can help anyone, anywhere, get all of this stuff sorted within their own mind. And that's what you do. That's that you live this stuff. You do it day in, day out. You're very, very good at it. And so for people wanting to connect with you, we are going to make sure that those your connections to you are in the chat box. If you're watching this video post live screening, you will also see connections and how to connect with Mel. And I encourage you just to have a conversation with Mel, just a conversation. It's not scary. She's not scary, but I tell you, it will be the change you need to have in your life. Oh my God, that was loud. That was really loud. Oh,
clap of thunder. You just see it out here.
It's I know. We also have an amazing resource this week. Mel, do you want to tell the audience about your resource? Because it's amazing.
I've been hinting at it a couple of times and we keep kind of moving on. The subject is so complex. I'm just going to open it here so I can remember. So the clair senses, there are nine ways that we can communicate with ourselves, and some are more common than others. Personally, I have at least four. A couple of others are kind of I'm trying to amp up and tune in. Just think of them like learning another language. Tune in and grow this abilities. So the first one, which most people kind of know or will talk about, is clair empathy, which is the feelings beyond our body. Clair cognizant is knowing. So like you said, you got a knowing when you came back to Scotland.
Yes, into Edinburgh. Yeah,
like for the first time, but you came into a knowing, like I've come home. So that's clair cognizant. So you obviously have a high aptitude for that. Clair intelligence is thinking beyond. I have quite a fine-tuned, when I'm in clients with this kind of knowledge comes in. It's like, I don't know where that knowledge came from. Think of genius, talented people like pianists that are children.
Yes.
Like they should not know, or they're able to create symphonies out of nothing. That they're born with a deep clair intelligence. Clair sentience is feeling beyond. So that's a kind of your feeling on a different level from empathy. Empathy is more connection to another thing. A clairsentience is different again. Clairaudience, most people know clairaudience. Yes. Hearing things, it's another one of mine. Clairvoyance, seeing. Clairtangence, that's touch. So a lot of Reiki. Anybody who's using that and getting knowing. So there are medical intuitives that can just touch a body and hands or on shoulders and feel something going on in their body. You're probably using a couple of different clairs in that. The less common ones are clair salience, which is smelling. So sommeliers. Anybody, perfumerists, I don't know what they're called. Yes. Anybody who uses their nose would probably have a very, very high, they would know what ingredients go together to make a beautiful perfume or smell. And then the last one's clairgustants, which think of our chefs. They just know what would work together. So all of our senses, there are nine clair gifts and talents. And so I've got a download that kind of explain them and a little bit around them so you can start to tune in what you are.
Grab that. And as I said before, the link to that resource that Mel's so wonderfully provided for the audience today is available for download. And if you're watching, it will accompany the notes that go with this show. Now, before we get blown away, struck by lightning or rained out, we are going to end the show on that note. Don't forget to jump on and check out Mel and all of her courses and all of her resources on melb.com. And we will be back next week to further our discussion on these amazing topics. And in the meantime, I want you all to stay safe. Please thank Mel B for another wonderful session on the Everyday Business Show. Thank you, Mel. And that, my friends, is your lot until next week when we're back with Mel again. Thank you, everyone. Bye for now.